All right. This is Congress Two Beers In.
Cheers.
We are 3 weeks into a shutdown. Are we 3 weeks into a shutdown?
Day 24.
Three beers into a podcast.
That's the thing about it. Whatever day of October it is, it's the day number of the shutdown.
Yeah, so we're deep in the shutdown.
Good at math over here.
We've got some interest, and one of the things that's interesting about this is one of the reasons the shutdown is occurring is because Democrats feel that whatever deal they're going to strike is just going to be undercut through impoundment. But we've got even crazier...
I think that complicates it, sure.
Yeah. Even crazier spending things going on with, like, the troop pay. You want to explain that a little bit?
I mean, so originally the White House said that they had found a way to transfer money for the troop pay, and, you know... That's believable. There's transfer authority all over the DOD bill. But it also was like a little sketchy to me because the account that the troop pay comes out, the MILPERS account.
And let's talk about transfer authority just real quick.
Oh,
that means
sure.
You can take like money from one account that's appropriated for one particular program or set of programs and move that to a different account in order to pay for different functions within a particular department.
And also, how common is this for DOD?
It's super common.
Yeah. Right.
But here's the thing. When Congress appropriates money, they appropriate for a purpose. That's one way they limit what the executive or the British Parliament limit what the king could do with the money. And so transfer authority is essentially a separate law. It's often in the same law. But it's saying, yes, we gave you this for research and development, and we gave you this for military pay, but here's some transfer authority. If you need to move stuff around, go ahead. Don't have to come back to us for new authority.
Right? And there are also these limitations that are included in this line.
Yeah,
it's like
sure.
No more than like 1% of this account can go to like and to include
and
like 1%.
And this stuff is all over appropriations bills.
Yeah, and timing constraints.
We know executives need flexibility. They got to be able to move stuff around. It's very common. The problem was I was like, I don't see this transfer authority. And second, how do you transfer something?
you and nobody else, man.
That's not wholly true, right? Because there is a general transfer authority of like $8 billion that's available to DOD on general do what you want with it to just be able to butter the stuff up. The problem is it doesn't quite mesh with the situation because how do you transfer money into an account that's expired, right? And so when you have sort of two-year money in research and development and you're trying to get it into MILPERS, but MILPERS doesn't exist yet for FY26.
MILPERS is where troop pay comes.
Military personnel, yeah. Doesn't exist for 26 yet, and all the 25 one-year stuff is expired. You're basically saying, can I take R&D money, transfer it to somewhere that doesn't exist, and sort of change it into new year money over there? It starts to get very sketchy quickly, and then I couldn't find any authority that did that.
And Shocker.
As it turned out, you know, Trump put out that order, like an executive order of some sort, a directive to Hegseth, which was basically just my guess looking at it was he said something like, my authority is commander-in-chief. I'm directing the Secretary of Defense to use this money if it sort of has a similar policy effect. Blah, 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 blah. Wave your hands and use it. And essentially what he's saying is there, just use the R&D money to pay the troops. We'll figure it out later. And that's what they did. They later came out with a set of talking points that I thought were essentially nonsense, which basically said that military money is different and the commander-in-chief can move stuff around there on constitutional authority, which I think is just pure garbage.
Yeah. That's
and, you know, when you think about the history of appropriations law and, you know, sort of Anglo-American legislatures, controlling war money is sort of one of the underlying bases of these things.
Sure.
And so that is not something the founders were looking to sort of not constrain.
Sure.
And so I find the whole troop pay thing bad news. On the other hand, like, politically, everybody kind of wants to pay the troops, so no one's going to call him out on this. Like, the last thing the Democrats are going to do is be like, we're going to court to sue you so we can't pay the troops. Like, that's not going to happen. And so you end up with a bad precedent. Now, I have no doubt on this specific case, they're going to backfill the money into RDT&E, right? Congress will eventually sort of straighten this out, but it's not great, and it goes in line with Trump doing all sorts of money moves that just don't sit well with me.
Sure.
Including raising money to, you know, build things at the White House. And I know it's all been done before in some ways, but it really is sort of unhinging Congress from sort of fundamental control of money in ways that don't sit well with me. That is all separate from the shutdown.
Sure. But, well, I just, you know, kind of put a nail in this thing. Like, it's not just unconstitutional. It's against the Anti-Deficiency Act. And to be sure, I think there are a lot of different things that Trump is doing, both in general and vis-a-vis Congress's power of the purse, that are genuinely new and worrisome. There are aspects of this particular case that take us back to kind of earlier fights with Trump, right? So he's used transfer authority in a bogus way to pay for the wall before, right? So this was like the big fight in 2019. You know, he ended up fighting it out in the courts. The Supreme Court puts a stay on it. Construction ends up stopping, and then, you know, a different judge says, like, you know, like, you have, the House does have standing to sue because this isn't cool. But it ends up, like, kind of, you know, coming in with a bang and, like, leaving with a whimper in terms of the courts, which is another pattern that we're seeing. You know, I don't even know what number in the hundreds of court cases he has against him at this point, and he's losing most of them on the lower courts level, and then he's got the Supremes to protect him.
I think the border wall transfer authority is, I agree with everything you said about it, but I find that to be in some ways completely different in this, because in there, the transfer authority exists, and it's written in the law, and we can see that he can take, or any president can take money out of the military construction accounts and use them for things that are
designated
emergencies or national emergencies. It's just a question of whether the border wall is a military function, and that's where I think it's bogus.
Sure.
Written authority where good faith people are making an argument. This is like just making up, I can spend out of this account for another purpose. There's no transfer authority even plausible. I find this to be another level of ridiculousness. I don't disagree with anything you said.
Yeah.
It's asserting a power that's not there, right? when I first heard about this, one of the things that stuck out to me is like, how many times have we done this before? Like, you know, whether it's like, you know, suspending habeas corpus during the start of the Civil War, or the Louisiana Purchase, and like back in Jefferson's administration, and it's troubling, right? It's like a holy crap kind of constitutional moment, and the question then becomes like, well, does this become a pattern? Does it become a trend, or is this a one-off type of thing? And that's where my head's kind of at right now. It's like this may be a one-off kind of thing, and maybe the kind of like constitutional hysteria around it maybe isn't as hyped up as it is. On the other hand, like, it's happening so frequently on so many different fronts. Like, I do worry about, you know, the kind of like general legislative power over appropriations, because it doesn't seem like this is going to be like, hey, this just fits in the one-off category, because like extenuating circumstances seem to be like they will continue.
I'm very much of the mind, especially given how Biden did essentially nothing to reverse the excesses of the first Trump administration on presidential power. I don't suspect any future president is going to do any reversals either. And that, you know, I find talk about sort of like, oh, Trump's an authoritarian, this kind of thing, backsliding, I find that all to be a little tedious. What I don't find tedious at all is the idea that we are basically creating a new constitutional order in the United States. I think that's patently obvious, that it's going to have different relationships in terms of power between the branches, and the presidency is just going to be much more powerful going forward.
Well, it's a new order. Whether it's constitutional or not is like the big...
Well, no, it just will be. No different than sort of post-Roosevelt or post-Jackson. It's not about whether it was constitutional. It just is going to be a different order.
It's a different order. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I'm really curious to watch is that it's a different order as long as the other branches allow it to be, right? And essentially right now, it's going to be a different order, at least for some period of time, because House Republicans have zero interest in asserting, or Senate Republicans at this point, in asserting Congress in a way that actually denies the president these power grabs. And so it will be a new order, at least for a period of time. And the question is, does it continue that way into the future? And that gets a little bit trickier. I mean, it depends on a lot of circumstantial things, like how the elections play out, what kind of checks will be instituted either at the Supreme Court level or at the Democratic Congress.
Sure.
And it's like, and so, yeah, it's like it is a new order to the extent that the branches continue to allow it to happen. But the thing that I can come back to is like the powers that they have to check this type of activity still exists, right?
They absolutely exist. And in the short term, I mean, you have the Democrats principally in the Senate with their bills that they're now not voting on anymore, contesting the shutdown on two major categories. One is presidential power of the purse, and the other of which is specifically healthcare. Mm-hmm. So ACA subsidies, which, you know, there's a gettable position on that, right? This is a divide the dollar game. This is not something like somebody's rights or due process or like abortion rights. Like, oh, you get to be in charge of your uterus for every like second day of the month. Fantastic, man. This is something where there is a gettable middle ground, and of course the Medicaid money is in there as well. But there's a gettable divide the dollar middle ground on this in a way that like kind of previous policy demands have not been realistic.
Yeah.
That being said, whether or not that happens, of course, is highly dependent on the volatility of the executive. But the thing that everyone seems to understand is that there's not going to be any sort of compromise or pushback where it comes to Congress defending itself with the power of the purse. Yeah. You know, to the extent that there's going to, the Democrats have, you know, there are two big categories of things that they're pushing for. The question mark is, do they get anything for healthcare policy? It's not, do they get anything for Congress?
I mean, I think, right, I agree with that last for sure. I mean, I do think I know when we are going to get the pushback and the terms of the new constitutional order are going to be laid down. And it's going to be when this Democrat president and the Supreme Court puts the brakes on the worst of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a question of what they leave in place. And I that's why I don't think this is going to spiral out of control. Because there's no way the Roberts Court is going to allow a Democratic president to take all the ICE money and stuff into FEMA. It's just not going to happen, right? Whether they allow a Democratic president to continue to move military money around at their will, that I think may go, right? And so that's the sort of, you can start to see the shape of the, you know, the sculpture being molded. Now, on the shutdown stuff...
This kind of ties into the shutdown, is... You know, one of the things that Democrats have been negotiating with Republicans during these deals, as the shutdown's occurring and they're passing, they're working on, like, you know, a minibus, like a conference, whatever. There are provisions in that minibus that do kind of restrict spending,
absolutely,
right? And you can, I mean, this is the kind of like quiet Republican resistance that we've become accustomed to under Trump's first administration. I don't know if
is this like the Susan Collins, like, put it
Susan,
in the,
particular, like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. She's had some strong words. Mm-hmm. She's got, it's much more than the furrowed brow, kind of like this is a, I mean, she's like, this is totally unacceptable. What's going on? So I do wonder, like, if there are going to be some more restrictions put into these deals that they're going to strike. And that's kind of an open question, and I don't know if that changes as it becomes more public or salient, but that is something that I've continued to watch. And so, like, yeah, I agree the Supreme Court will be, like, a big check once, you know, the different political circumstances.
I mean, there will be a hard line they right. will draw, right? Yeah. It's not going to spiral out of control. Right?
I do wonder if, like, Congress will start chipping away at some of this stuff, maybe, too.
I mean, just for clarification's sake, is this, like, Colin saying that you want to, that he wants to put things not just in the conference report, but in the bill itself?
Yeah, in the minibusters, actually.
No, I know that that's in there, but are there additional things that you're watching?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just basically that, like, kind of legal restrictions on what not should be spent, what shall be spent, right? Things like you can't transfer money between these accounts, like restrictions on those types of stuff. I mean, like, I think it's still wait and see kind of thing, right? Because, I mean, with any of these types of things, you have the deal, and then, like, when you're actually striking the deal and the president gets involved, like, I imagine some of those restrictions might change.
I mean, there's other things that you don't even need to put in the bills. Like, the Senate Republicans can basically turn off whenever they want the Impoundment Control Act, submitted rescissions. They can just be like, we're not doing these, right? That doesn't do anything for you, like, pocket rescissions, but it does go reverse on one thing they already did this year, right? Yeah. I could see that happening, too. I think on the healthcare stuff, I actually think that's an odd situation because I'm pretty sure Trump wants to cut a deal on that in the end. The sticking point is really the House Republicans. I think the Senate Republicans want a deal too. The frontliners on the Republican side absolutely want a deal. And that's sort of a weird piece of this is that, you know, anytime you're in a situation like this, you can have a policy or you can have an issue. And I think there's plenty of Democrats who, like, in the back of their head is like, I kind of like the issue here.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know, but that doesn't mean it's good if they get the issue. It's not clear who would get blamed for all this. But,
well, like, Mike Johnson would get blamed for all this.
Solving the policy here doesn't seem to be hard at all because I think there's a lot of people in both parties who want to solve the policy. And I think, actually, in the end, the Republicans are going to have a bluff and try and get something for themselves out of it, right? Could be the farm bailout or whatever for the soybean farmers or whatever. Yeah. But like you say, like, this is not unsolvable. You didn't need
totally
a shutdown
solvable.
To do this either. Yeah. Like, I think this was coming in December anyway.
Well, it's also like a real versus, like, revealed preferences. And the fact that having such an volatile executive, like, makes that hard because if he would come down and say, like, hey, let's get something, like, it's hard to pin down Trump's true position on a lot of things because he's kind of all over the place, but he's also the guy who said earlier this year, like, don't go after Medicaid. Like, he understands on some level as a salesman, not as a someone who thinks about policy a whole lot, but as a salesman, that this is probably not a great thing for them. Yeah. You know, you've got Republicans in Congress, like, saying, like, you know, we'd like this guy to get kind of back in the game. You know, he's been on the sidelines for a while. I think, like, what ends up happening, like, he could force something.
Well, I also think this is the reason that Democrats, and again, I'm I may be the outlier here. Democrats say that the shutdown is for healthcare. I just don't, that's not the reason the government shut down, right?
Correct.
And the reason that I don't think it's the actual reason the government shut down, because for a couple of reasons. One, they wanted to shut down the government in March, right, for all the things that were happening. And I think the state of play in March that was kind of like forcing a filibuster in the Senate, but Schumer went against, I think those are the forces that are animating this shutdown. I don't think that's fundamentally different. I think the reason that they're saying that healthcare is the reason they're shutting the government down is exactly this reason. It is a winnable issue.
And their best issue, right?
It's also their best issue. It's also like something that is genuinely something they care about, and that affects lives.
They can claim credit for, right? I mean, like, I'm just going like pure cynical politics. Like, if you're a congressional leader and you don't want to shut down because you know it's not going to end well, and you know you're not going to get the things you actually want, which is restrictions on impoundments and actually forcing spending, then you're going to try to find the best issue that allows you to claim some credit for a victory, and that's getting an ACA subsidy credit or victory that, like, both sides kind of want anyway, right? And so I think that, you know, it's interesting that this is the holdup. I do think there's a deal that will be done eventually, whether that's, you know, I don't think it'll be now. It'll probably be in
December.
I
think it's sincerity as well as strategy, though. Like,
maybe
you can't separate those two on some level, but, like, you know, it's mostly rural areas with redder people in it that will suffer more if the ACA credits are not continuing.
True, although a secondary part of this, though, is that they want to make sure the ACA doesn't circle down the drain,
correct.
Right?
Like,
if this skyrockets premiums and stops this thing from working, that is not great either for Democrats. So two things I've been very surprised about in the shutdown. One is related to this, is that the Democrats just haven't owned the shutdown in the way I thought they would.
Right,
they spent 6 months saying, should we shut the government down? And then they do, but now they're trying to pretend they didn't. And it might be better to just say, we think it's worth shutting the government down because these things are going to happen. They haven't done that, though. They've tried to blame the Republicans.
Yeah.
Fine. Second thing that surprised me is that we've really gotten to a stalemate where it sort of hit an equilibrium where it doesn't seem like either side has any urgency right now to really do anything. You see bits and pieces of it, but I did not expect that. I thought by this point someone would be hurting politically or sort of substantively and ready to move. And I don't see
it. Well, and part of that's the public opinion on this, you know, like,
yes,
100%.
You know, like, people are blaming Republicans more, but also just, yeah, there's a lack of urgency. I mean, I don't think that was necessarily foretold, right? No. So you have going into this, you know, Trump says, oh, you know, we're going to do these big rifts, reduction of forces, firing federal employees. Sorry, every now and again I do try to translate myself for the microphone over here. On, like, mid-October, October 10th, they fire a little over 4,000 of these folks, right? That, of course, is going to the courts again. But this was, like, the big thing that Democrats were so concerned about in March, right? What will he do if we give him this sort of a circumstance to exploit? So I don't think that it was necessarily, like, written stone or ink or anything else, that, like, people, that we'd be in this level of, I don't know, settling into these positions without...
I mean, part of it is that the administration has gone out of their way not to make the shutdown painful, right? They have the rifts. On their hand, they did pay the troops. They're trying to figure out how to get the WIC checks out, right? Like, these are all things that could really... They're trying to find ways to pay the air traffic controllers. Like, everything you could do to not end the shutdown if you're worried about pain.
Although they're not paying them yet. So, like, OMB isn't doing that. They're paying, like... Well, they just started paying, like, the FBI and DHS people, like 2 days ago. And, like, where that money is coming from, I do not currently
Well,
know.
The DHS money can come from the Big Beautiful Bill.
Sure.
Big Beautiful Bill has all that, you know, discretionary money that shouldn't be in those bills anyway. But I do think that one thing that is weird is that partisanship seems to have totally overtaken public opinion on this. Like, there's just no...
Yeah.
The president's numbers, Republicans are getting blamed kind of in proportion to how unpopular the president is, but the president's numbers aren't going down. It's very sort of almost dispiriting to me. It's going to move anyone of this shutdown.
We finally found something to depress you, man.
Cognitive dissonance.
What time is it?
Anyone goes on that
it's 2 o'clock on October 24th.
Persuasiveness does not exist.
That's Osmond's sad boy.
I mean, like, and I mean, Oh, man. I don't know, man. I'm not sure what you could do right now to get, like, 70% of people who agree on something related to, like, these sorts of things. Like, if Chuck Schumer was out there lighting the Capitol on fire.
Well, nobody likes him.
Sure. Okay.
Like, there's public opinion, right? There's a politician with, what, 16, 17% approval? Yeah. Like, people seem to dislike him. Yeah. But it is interesting. I mean, like, this is something that I forget who it was. Maybe it was Jennifer Victor, who said that, like, partisanship was going to, like, solidify around the positions and that we wouldn't see anybody, like, get actually blamed for the shutdown. Which was, I was like, nah, well, we've seen it before. People get blamed for the shutdown. Yeah. That hasn't really happened this time, at least not yet. Right. And the caveat here is, like, the pain is still coming, right? Yeah. Where people are still not going to get paid. This is, we're going to be, next week we're going to be approaching the time when FAA... Or, air traffic controllers walked off the job.
Another
military check is going to miss.
Another
civilian check is going to miss. Like, the real pain is around, it's a few days away.
SNAP benefits are supposed to expire on November 1st.
And you got sort of the other pressure points coming up too, right? You got the letters going out with the premium increases. You have the Virginia elections, which... or a different kind of pressure point.
And then November 1st, you got open enrollment, right?
I'm curious what you think about how much of a forcing function that is, because I think there's a there, but it also goes until January 15th.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that I think open enrollment might be an inflection point is because it's a off-ramp for Democrats, right? Right around the time that... that things are getting really painful, it's an off-ramp, right? So Democrats can say, like, hey, we fought the good fight. Like, they wouldn't extend your premiums. Too many people are missing checks, and the FAA, we don't have enough air traffic controllers. Like, we're going to reopen the government, but we want to know that we're fighting for your health care. We're going to continue to fight. I mean, it's just an easy off-ramp for them at a time when things are getting particularly painful. And that's sort of, like, the only reason that I see it possibly shutting down then, but I'm not even really convinced. I'm not fully convinced that that's going to be the animating time either.
Well, I think you make a point about potential rhetoric here, but also the thing goes until January 15th, and like these people are pretty sunk into their positions. So, like,
yeah.
I don't know, it's like a baseball game. You gotta let it play out on some level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to be, I wouldn't say interesting to watch. It's like enough. There's been enough pain already at this point in time.
Is this fun for you, Josh?
No, it's not. I'm currently planning a class right now that I'm positive will not run in the first week in November.
Yeah, right. Two classes, like, canceled this week.
And so, it's kind of depressing on that front. But I see that as like the first real off ramp, and otherwise like pretty steady equilibrium. Right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that you see a little moving on, and I thought, I've been surprised about Thune's strategy in the Senate the whole way. I was never clear on why he was giving Schumer the opportunity to get cloture votes on Democratic alternatives. I think it was because they wanted to do NDAA, and putting that on the floor was going to force opportunities to make motions to proceed that might have been able to get cloture petitions in there, but even that seems weird to me. His strategy now of just voting on CRs, but now also voting on other things that we saw peel off Democratic senators in different...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Combinations, I always thought was a smart move that I'm not sure why he didn't do it earlier. Maybe he thought Schumer was just going to do like a 10-day show of the world, I'm shutting it down, shut down, and now that it's real, we're moving to sort of hardball tactics. But forcing votes on, you know, the DOD bill and on pay for exempted people in an attempt to peel different or more Democratic senators off may be a strategy that can sort of undo an equilibrium a little bit. Haven't seen it a lot yet. The Georgia senators did vote for the pay for the exempted workers. A little different combination there, but nothing major to move yet. But that strategy is the kind of thing that can sort of at least put a pickaxe in the ice a little bit, even if it doesn't sort of immediately bear fruit.
It would be really interesting to see how the House would respond to this sort of thing if they would decide
if they
to
would
come
open
back
show up sometime. Just, I mean, it's just the House representatives.
Unbelievable.
Why would they be here?
Not a good time to be a constituent in Arizona 7th, I'll say that much right now.
No.
I hope you have no problems with, like, anything involving the government that might need constituent
services
for.
That's something that's super troubling to me, this precedent that we're not going to sit duly elected members to the House. It harkens back to like the kind of nasty days when
For our listeners, this is like, Adelita Grijalva, who won the special election
back in September.
Yep, the 23rd.
And has yet to be seated because her seating her would lead to her being the 218th signature on a discharge petition about the Epstein files. At least that's the reason that everybody's consumer. But like, we've had a variety of different excuses from Speaker Johnson, but it's just terrible. It's a terrible precedent because it goes back to those days of like contested elections back in the like 1880s, 1890s, like, oh, we don't believe your elections, like we're going to seat the challenger sort of thing. It's just nasty, and it shouldn't, like at this point, there's no good reason not to seat her. She should be seated. No. It should be non-controversial. It should be done in the pro forma that was done today, right? But it wasn't. And so it's just a gross precedent, in my opinion. It's a major, major, major bad moment.
And this is also you're delaying pain, if you see it that way, from the position of Speaker Johnson. That is going to eventually happen.
Yeah,
you know, it's a horrific denigration of democratic norms. But also, like, buddy, eat the frog. You know,
you can't hold back a majority forever, right?
I mean, and like that's the crazy thing about it is that it's not like Johnson is just going the whole 9 miles and being like, we're going to be here and I'll seat you when I feel like we're going to do other stuff and just blow everything up. He's literally just being like, well, if we come back, I have to seat you. So therefore, we're not coming back, right? Like, it's like that dumb.
And it is like, it. On the other hand, like, you know, it goes to the, if that bill did get out, right? And the petition was signed and the House does pass it, that goes to the Senate. And what happens over there? Like, maybe there's a filibuster, I'm sure. But, it's putting Republican senators in a bad spot. Does that pass, though, the Senate?
I mean, I think what they're actually scared of, or plausibly scared of, is that the vote in the House could be a floodgate opening vote, right? Is that, yeah, you got 218 in the discharge petition, but there's like 40 or 50 Republicans who are just praying this thing never sees the light of day.
Yeah.
And then they're going to feel compelled to vote for on the floor. Right. What's actually going to happen is it's going to get 260 votes, and then that's going to sort of ramp shit up.
Right.
But I don't know how realistic that is, right?
And then when it goes to the president's desk for signature.
Right, they're scared of the shadows, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's a floodgate vote, or they're all just scared of Trump, so it could easily go either way.
Yeah.
I
do think it is interesting how these things kind of sort out, where it seems like there's no momentum for it, there's no momentum for it, there's no momentum for it, there's not enough momentum for it, and then all of a sudden, like, it passes by unanimous consent, right? And we saw this recently with the AUMF, the repeal of the Iraq AUMF, where it's like sort of, you know, nope, nope, nope. And I mean, how long have they been trying to do this? For like a decade or so. Like, Jim McGovern's been out there, like, yelling his little Massachusetts brain out, right, about the AUMF and repealing the AUMF. And it hasn't had the votes. And he's tried to stick it on every NDAA possible. And, like, several people on both sides of the aisle have been trying to do this. And then all of a sudden just passed the Senate by unanimous consent, right? Or just voice vote, right? It's just like, oh, yeah, no, we should get rid of that. And then all it's just, but it is one of those things where, like, all of a sudden you see history, you see kind of, like, the way in which the political winds are blowing, and you just don't fight them anymore, right? Saw similar things like the Civil Rights Act, right? Yeah, it didn't have enough support, and then all of a sudden, like, you have a ton of people voting for it. It passes overwhelmingly in both chambers once it overcomes the filibuster.
Well, after.
Oh, yeah. No, decades. Right. But it takes that long. But then all of a sudden, once you see the political winds, like, oh, it's going to happen. Like, everybody jumps on board, right? And it's going to be interesting what happens. I think it might be the same case with, like, the Epstein files, because that is one instance where the Republican base is super animated about this particular issue and have been for years. And, like, they can't just wish it away, right? They can't, like, the idea that this was, you know, sort of like Barack Obama's, like, brainchild or whatever it is, it's just sort of like it just falls on deaf ears because they know too much about it, right? So we'll see. But it's not great that we still haven't seated the Democratic representative from Arizona. Just not a good precedent in the House.
No, it's I think it's a dangerous one. And, you know, it's also just, it's a, you know, there were constituents who were getting constituent services right up until the special election, I believe.
Right.
You know, from staffers that were still working on their behalf in the office. And, you know, there are all sorts of different things that you could very legitimately need help from and have a hard time getting that help as directly straight from a federal agency. You know, it's an important part of congressional coursework.
Especially at a time when a government's shutting down.
Especially at a time where government's shutting down and like things are hard and things are weird. And, you know, I don't think that's a minor thing to be able to serve your constituents when they need the most. Yeah, that's a tough thing.
Yep. Anything else?
Oh, blurg. There's so much news. Like, I feel like with a different news cycle, like, I'd still be joking about
I'll register my hot take.
Oh, okay.
Nope, all right.
I like the ballroom at the White House. I think it's a good idea.
Oh.
And I think those stupid tents they put up on the lawn are dumb, and a 1,000-person ballroom is a good idea. I'm sure it's going to be unbelievably gaudy on the interior. The next president can fix that, hopefully. But I think it's a good idea. I don't know about knocking down the East Wing, but putting a 1,000-person ballroom at the White House, if Congress had designed this, I would be clapping.
The fact that Trump is doing it
is, you know, bullshit from my point of view without consulting Congress, but the actual substantive result, I think, will be good.
Well...
And I think it'll be well used by lots of future presidents.
I just I dislike the whole not Congress thing, right?
That's
the big caveat here. It's like they've all done this, and you see what Truman did. It's like, yeah, well, Congress did that,
yeah,
right?
I'm pro ballroom. Like, people are getting on the case about this ballroom itself, and it's like, we got to have these events at the White House. They have these events at the White House, and they're in friggin' wedding tents on the lawn. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah, fair. Like, still. No.
Process versus substance distinction.
Right, announcement. Yeah, we're like the only procedural people who have like preferences about exactly how things are done.
True. Plenty of people who are angry at Trump are substantively like, oh, we don't need a ballroom. I don't believe that for a second. They need a ballroom at the White House that's worthy of the most powerful nation in the world.
Fair. All right.
Yeah, also, the Canadians are using clips from Reagan speeches to...
Talk free trade,
and
not hard. Man. Plenty of clips.
Yeah, they're the Canadians are not happy right now.
Oh, Canada!
We love just you guys. Saw a bunch of clips. if you're not, like, this is Friday, October 24th, and the Canadian Prime Minister is out there saying about how he's going to kind of reroute trade around the United States. So it's like, oh man, all right. So it's going to be interesting moving forward. In any event, that's not our specialty. What our specialty is Congress. They're mostly out, so we don't have much more to talk about. With that, we'll be back in a week or so, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. Why not?
Maybe we'll see, like,
a we'll see. We'll be back before Speaker Johnson brings the House back.
I'm
pretty sure.
Definitely true.
Right. That's an endeavor thing. All right. That's it for us.
Adelita Watch 2025.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks, everyone.